Begin the current daf, Masechet Baba Kama, daf Samach Beis. Begin four lines up from the bottom of the Amud, and daf Samach Alef Amud Beis, where the Gemara continues the discussion in the previous daf, and that is, we had mentioned a fundamental machlekes in the previous Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim regarding one of the principles in the Mazik of Eish, and that is regarding what's called Tamun Ba'Eish. If someone has a fire that goes out with his negligence and destroys someone else's crop, so he's liable for those damages. Let's say something was hidden inside over there in their crop. So there's a machlekes, the Rabbanan hold that you're exempt from that liability of Tamun Ba'Eish, as they learn it from Gzeiras HaKasav, from Oy HaKama, whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds you're going to be chayev. So on that, the Gemara continues along the halachas of the parameters of that machlekes and regarding where do each other agree to the other's opinion. So turn around, we learn the Braisa. Hamadlik es hagadish, v'hoyu bo'kelim udelakai. In this case, if someone burnt up someone else's pile of grain, and inside they were utensils, they were vessels, and they got burnt up. So Rabbi Yehuda, imer misham kol ma shehi b'teich, says you got to pay for whatever's inside. He holds that you are liable for tamin be'esh. The Chacham Aimrim, they disagree. They say, ein misham el gadish al chidin, a gadish al sa'irin. You pay for whatever the pile of grain was, whether it be wheat or barley. Now, however, v'rein makam kelim kilu malei tefuah, but you visualize the area of where the kelim took up in that pile of grain as if that was full of produce, because whatever grain was being burnt up, that was part of the pile. Now, although the kelim that are hidden inside, you're not chayv for that, but as if you would be paying and you pay that compensation as if that space was rather from the wheat or the barley instead of the kelim, which that's considered tamen, you're not chayv on. Now, that the Gemara, the Braisa continues on top of Samach Bezim and Aleph and says, when was this said that according to the Chachamim that Tamin Be'esh is Pater? That is B'malik B'teich Shaloi. This is, as we see, was discussed in the previous daf. B'malik B'teich Shaloi, if someone lit the fire in his own yard, his own domain, and it goes and it travels to someone else's yard, that's where, as we had quoted from Taisus, that's where the exemption of Oy HaKama was said in the case of a Kisei Tzeyesh, when you lit in your own yard and it goes up to somewhere else. But if the guy lit the fire in that other person's yard, then everyone would agree that you have to pay whatever was hidden inside that pile of grain. Now, Rashi actually has a different gear, so he doesn't have the word koil, and that's why he says that Rava would have to answer it according to his opinion, that it's not for everything that's hidden inside, but rather certain kelim that are normal to be hidden, for example, things that are used for the cattle, and things that are used for plowing. Those are things that would make sense, that would be hidden somehow there in the yard under the pile of grain, because he holds it's not everything. Things which are not normal, even there you wouldn't be chayiv. So again, that's a machlokes on my Ram, how to qualify this admission of the Chacham, when you would be chayiv in Tamin Be'esh, is that everything or only certain things that are normal, but again, you would be chayiv if you did it in the other person's yard. So that's where the Chacham agreed to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim that there are cases that you would be exempt on Tamin Be'esh, but mashal mokum l'chaveir l'hagdish gadish, whereas a guy lent a guy space to his friend to pile up his grain over there. V'higdish v'hitmin, now so the guy did it, he piled up his pile of grain, but he additionally hid one of his stuff inside that pile of grain. And that says the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda would agree, she'ein mishalem el dmei gadish bovad, that the guy who let him keep his stuff there would not be chayiv for the tamen over there, and only for the pile of grain that he let him there. So if the Baal HaSadr was making a bonfire in his yard and he ended up burning up that guy's grain, he would not be chayiv from what is hidden inside, because he only accepted responsibility to watch the gadish, and that's what he gave him permission for. He didn't say that he could bring in anything else, and therefore what was hidden inside over there, he's going to be exempt. Another case, Rabbi Yehuda would agree, is, let's say, lahagdish chitin v'higdish sa'irin. Let's say he gave him permission to pile up a pile of wheat, and instead he piled up a pile of barley. Or let's say sa'irin v'higdish chitin. He gave him permission to pile up barley, and instead he piled up wheat. Or let's say chitin v'chifin b'sa'irin. Let's say he gave him permission to make a pile of wheat, and that's what the guy did, but he covered it, the outermost layer of that pile, he covered with barley. So although he gave him permission to put up wheat, he's not going to have to pay for the wheat, and only he's going to have to pay for barley, because he's going to tell him, saying, wait a second, I didn't see any wheat over there. I only saw barley, and therefore I wasn't so careful, because barley is not what we had made up regarding wheat, and therefore he's not going to have to pay for the wheat. He's only going to have to pay for barley. And so to Sa'urin Mechitin Mechitin, let's say he gave him permission for barley, and he didn't see a pile of barley. He saw the guy only seeing wheat because the outermost layer of that pile was with wheat. The halacha is, there, You're not going to have to pay for the wheat because you didn't give him permission for the wheat. The most that you're going to have to pay for, which is the lowermost, is that of the barley. Now, Tosfos qualifies this halacha and says it must be talking about, obviously, with a guy who had made the fire, even though he gave permission by the guy to pile up a pile, it must have been in another area, a separate area, not the area where the guy had given him permission to pile up the pile. So therefore, in such a case, when he gave him permission to put in barley and he piled up wheat, there the halacha is going to be that he's not going to have to pay for the wheat, because if he had done it in the area where the guy had piled up, where he gave him permission to pile it up, then why wouldn't he pay wheat if he sowed over there? Because as Taisa says, as we'll see shortly in the Gemara compares our halacha over here to when a man gives a golden dinner to a woman and he tells her it's silver, and then she's negligent. So there it sounds like that's only in such a case when she's negligent, where it's like she didn't do it actively, but if she goes and destroys it, which is like going into the other person's sada, then the Gemara says she would be chayav for dinner zav, even though he only told her dinner kesef. The fact of only being chayav for dinner kesef, because she says, well, you told me silver, I didn't know it was gold, that is like when she didn't do it actively. So therefore Tosfos qualifies this halacha same way regarding the case of specifically of sa'irin behigdish chitin, where he sees wheat. That's only if he made the fire in his own part, but if he did in the part of where he gave permission to the guy, then that's total negligence, then he would be chayiv even on the chitin. But again, this is a case where Behuda would agree to the Chachamim that he would not be chayiv for what was not visibly what he had agreed to with the other person. So therefore, some of the cases share that characteristic where, although it might be tamen, he's not going to be chayiv for that because that's not what we had made up. And similarly, there's these other cases where if we made up one thing and you burned something else, so then I wasn't going with that understanding, that wasn't what we made up, and therefore Behuda would agree that you wouldn't be chayv. Now, relating to this halacha, the Gemara says, Amar Rava, says, Hanaisin dinner zav le'isha. Someone gives a golden coin that's a dinner to a woman, Vamala, and he tells her, he's zahri boy, I want you to be careful with this coin, shall cast her food because it's silver. Now, his ikasai, if she damages, she actively damages it, mishalem is dinner zav, she has to pay for the worth of a golden dinner. Mishum de Amalo, because he would tell her, Mahava Lech Gabe Dazakti. What are you doing damaging it actively with your hands? Where if, let's say, she burnt it or she threw it into the water, that you have no rights to. Now, as Rashi points out, this is not similar. This is the other, like what Tosfos had pointed out, where it's not similar to the case of where he lent a guy space to put up a pile of barley, and instead he put up a pile of wheat, which we just said previously that he doesn't have to pay for the wheat. He only has to pay for the barley. So why isn't that the same thing over here by the woman where he said, watch it because it's silver. So why is she liable for gold when he only told her that it's silver? And that Rashi says the same idea where it's regarding when she burns it or throws it into the ocean, that is an active case of damaging. That is not negligence. Negligence is a case of kisei eish, like we said, when it goes out by itself. So that's, again, when you do it in your own yard, that's where the halacha is going to be, where you only have to pay what the person had told you, what you had made up with the person. But here she actively destroys it, that is no right, and therefore she'll have to pay for it, even though she thought it was silver, she'll have to pay for the golden dinner. Now, however, the other case, Pasha Bai, let's say she didn't actively destroy, but she was negligent, she didn't watch it the way a watch person was supposed to watch it, and it gets lost. Then Mishalem Mishal Kesef, then she only has to pay for the value of what a silver coin would be. Because the Amar Leh, she says to him, look, Netirusa de Kaspa Kibili Alai. I only accepted upon myself responsibility of a silver coin. That's what you told me. Netirusa de Havalu Kibili Alai. I never accepted upon myself the responsibility of a golden coin. And therefore, although it really was gold, but that's not what you told me, and therefore the liability would only be for silver. Now, Amar Leh Rav Mordechai L'Rav Ashi, he says, and this is where it comes into the Gemara's previous discussion, says, Atun b'deravim asnitula. You said over this halacha in the name of Rava. Anan, mimasnita pshitalan. We can have the same halacha that you said from Rava distilled from a brisa, which is the brisa we just quoted before. The brisa said, chitin v'chipan b'sa'irin. Let's say he gave his friend permission to put in his yard wheat, but he didn't see wheat. He covered it over with barley. Or sa'irin v'chipan b'chitin. We gave him permission for barley, and the guy had barley, but he covered it over with wheat. Said the Braisa, Eina Mishalem El Demei Sarim Bulvat. So the guy, if he makes a fire and ends up burning that guy's stuff, he only has to pay for barley. So Amma, what we see is, because Amma, he tells him, Nitirusa de Sarika Bilili. I accepted upon myself the responsibility of barley. And that's why, although that here it is, when I saw wheat, I wasn't responsible for that. And therefore, if something happens like that, I'm only going to have to pay for what I accepted, which was for barley. Same idea here also. She could tell him that, look, I only accept the responsibility of silver, and therefore I didn't accept the responsibility of gold, and that's why she's only have to pay for silver. So again, that's the Gemara's previous halacha, which we said was being brought in because of what Rabbi Huda agrees to the Chachamim, where you're not going to be chayav for whatever is there, either because it's a case of where a person lends him for one thing and he ends up bringing something else, or because then the person covered it up with something else, and therefore that wasn't what was perceived to be what we had made up. And again, therefore it goes based on what they had made up beforehand. Same thing here with the woman. It was based on what they had made up beforehand. What really was that I didn't accept responsibility, and therefore there's an exemption. Now the Gemara resumes discussing a topic related to the halacha of our Mishnah. Amar Rav. Shamus Milsel Rabbi Yehuda says, I heard something relating to the halacha of Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, which is again this manda amar that holds that you're exempt in tamen, that you're chayiv in tamen be'ish, that you'll be liable even though it's hidden. But b'lo yada amar, I don't know what it was. Amar Shmuel, Shmuel says, b'lo yada abba mai shmile. What Rav doesn't know, which abba was an honorific, the way he would call him, doesn't know what he heard regarding Rabbi Yehuda. I'll tell you what it was. Rabbi Yehuda de mechayiv on this kitam be'ish. According to Rabbi Yehuda, holds that there's a liability for a guy who burnt up someone else's gadish, even what's hidden inside. Asu takanes nigzal be'ishai. They instituted a takana for which was related to like a guy who gets stolen from. They made a similar takana for someone regarding when fire destroys his crop. In other words, just like the Chachamim made a certain takana for a guy who was stolen from, which as it's brought in Masechet Shavuos of Memdalim and Beis in the Mishnah over there, where if someone gets stuff that is stolen from him, the guy who was stolen from swears how much was stolen and that he could collect from the Ganav, which that's an unusual exception, because usually a Shavuah is the defendant swears. That's from the exceptions, for example, by a Sacher or by a Nigzal, where the exception is that they swear and they collect with the oath. So too is what they had said halacha regarding Rabbi Yehuda's halacha. Same thing applies by the mazik of Eish, where he could swear what was hidden inside, because that's obviously not visible. We only know it was a pile of grain. He says, I swear I had this inside. How do we know? That's where we instituted. He could swear and he could take, because we don't know any other way besides what he's testifying, because it was hidden inside. Now, Boy Amemer asked, Asu takan is nigzal b'masr oylai. This takan of nigzal, which again is just the paradigm using of explaining where you could have someone that is collecting with the oath, which is by someone that was stolen from. So we said that the same thing applies to halacha of tamen ba'esh. So that a Amemer's question was, did we say the same thing regarding a masr oylai, regarding someone that someone else was meister him, was an informer to the government regarding something that this guy was doing, thus causing him a loss? So do we say that just like a guy who was stolen from could swear and collect, so to the master or not? So the Gemara explains that according to the opinion that says we do not judge halachic court cases of garmi, which are indirect causes of damage, which this is discussed in the Perek Gaiz L'Maicha later on the Kof Yud Zayin on the Beis. So then, like Tibayalach, then the whole question doesn't even begin. The Mesirius Nami Loi Danina, because then you're not going to judge court cases of Mesirius, because that's indirect cause. Where, it was the guy who went to the government and says, hey, look at this guy, what he's doing. So that obviously ended up causing the damage, but it's a garmi. And we don't judge that. We can't collect based on that type of indirect damage. Like Tibayalach, rather, what Amemer says, when would you have the question? Alibi the Mando Amma Danina Din the Garmi, according to the Mando Amma, the one who says that we do judge those type of court cases, and if someone is found guilty of garmi, he has to compensate. So that's where the question is. Asu takan is nigzal b'masur. Did they make the law, the institution of a guy who was stolen from, that he could swear and collect, so too for a guy who was informed on, that he could swear what was informed on him and what the losses were, and he could collect? Did mishtabei v'shokel, that he could swear and take? Oiloy, or maybe not. That's the Gemara take or let it stand. It's not clear if that same takana would apply by a masur or not. Now the Gemara brings the following story to illustrate this halacha regarding a guy swearing what the losses were and to be able to collect based on that. So who gavar, there was a certain person, the batish bekaspasa de chavar. He pushed this box, which people put in their money box. So his friend's money box was right there. He pushed it, and shadi ben adah and ben anara, and he threw it into the river. So asam mari v'amr, so the owner of the money box came, and he said, hachi v'hachi havali begava. I had this and this inside this box, and the guy owes it to me. So Yasser Ravashi was sitting and he was analyzing this halacha. Kiyagav demai, what would be the halacha in this type of situation? So Amli Ravina Rav Acha Bereid Rava of Amrila, and some say it was Rav Acha Bereid Rava or Rav Ashi, said, Lav Hainem Asnitin, isn't this the halacha of our Mishnah? That now we learn in the Mishnah, Moedim Chacham Rabbi Yehuda, that the Chacham agreed to Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, although you're generally going to be exempt on Taman Be'ei, something that's hidden, we don't know what was inside the box, but they agree, B'malikas Abira, if somebody lights a fire and burns up a tower or a mansion, something that has stuff inside of it, then it's normal to have things inside of it. And the Chacham agree that you have to pay, even though it's hidden by the outside walls, you have to pay whatever is inside of it. Because it's normal for people to put stuff inside of houses, so then you are liable. It's like going to someone else's property, lighting a fire, where we said the Rabban agree you have to pay what's inside. So therefore, seemingly, that would be the case over here. The guy has a money box. It's normal to put money in the money box, and therefore he would have to pay him what he says was inside. So Amalei says to him, wait a second. You're right. If the guy was claiming that he had a certain amount of money inside, of course, that would be what we call the takanas of Nigzal, which we apply by even Betamid Ba'esh, which what's hidden inside the tower, inside the money box. Of course, the guy could swear and collect based on that. But Hacham Ha'iskinu, what are we talking about over here? The Katoin Marginisa. He's claiming that he had a jewel inside the money box. My, that's my question. What's the halacha over there? Mi manchi inchi marginisa bekaspasa. Is it normal for people to put jewels in the money box? Or maybe not. That's the question, because the whole halacha l'cham that they agree by beer is because what's normal? Is this normal or is it not? Tiku, let it stand. It wasn't clear if people do that or not to be able to say that he'll be able to swear to collect what was in it or not. Similarly, Amalei Rav Yemel Rav Ashi, he says, Toin kasa de kaspa bebira. If a guy claims that he had a silver cup in his tower, and the guy burnt up his tower and now he wants to collect, my, what's the halacha? Where we said that you could collect based on what's hidden in the Kohen Tacham in the Bira. So if he claims he had a silver cup, what would the halacha be? So Rav Ashi said to him, Chazina, let's see. E inish amid hu, if he's a wealthy guy, meaning that they evaluate him that he's a guy who would probably have a silver cup, the isle kasa de kaspa, that he has a silver cup, or inami, or even inish mehemnehu, the trustworthy type of a guy. The mifka di inichigabe, where people trust him and they deposit stuff with him. So it would make sense that he would also have a silver cup inside his house. So mishtabei v'shakal, such a guy could swear and collect. But if he lied, but if not, if he's not wealthy and he's not trustworthy, then lav kol kamina, then he has no right to make such a claim, and therefore he would not be able to collect based on his claim a silver cup. Now the Gemara concludes this discussion with an unrelated topic. Only Rav Ada Breder Aviel Rav Ashi says, Mabin Gazlan L'chamsin. What's the difference between what's called a Gazlan, which is somebody that comes straight out and steals something from someone, to a Chamsin? Now Tosis points out that in the terminology of the Torah, of the Pesukim, there is no difference between them. Here the Gemara's question is regarding rabbinic terminology, whereas we find a Brisim, Masechta Sanhedrin, which talks about Gazlonin and Chamsonin. So rabbinically, what's the difference between the terms of Gazlan and Chamsin? So Rav Ashi responded, he says, Chamsin yob dami. Chamsin, although he grabs away something from somebody, he gives money. Gazlan lo yob dami. Gazlan just grabs away and doesn't give any money. So on that he asked him, Amalei, yob dami, if the guy's giving him money, Chamsin karsley, calling him a Chamsin? V'am Revun, Revunah says, Taluah v'zavin zavini zavini. If somebody compels a guy, he pushes a guy, and he forces him to sell him something, and he sells it to him, it's considered a sale. In other words, he's not a thief. So then how can you say that Chamsin, which is a level of a thief, just different than Gazlan, that he gives him money, that he's a Chamsin? Why? We said that that's a valid sale. He didn't steal it. He got it. Yeah, he shouldn't do that. Shouldn't force somebody to do it, but if he did it, it's a sale. So why is he a Chamsin if he gave him money? So that Rav Ashi said, Loi Kash, that's not a difficulty. Hada Amar Reitzani. The case you describe from Rav Huna is when he pushes him and pressures him, but he finally says, I agree. So then it's a valid sale and he's not a Chamsin. Hadala Amar Reitzani. Chamsin is, he didn't say I want. He just grabbed it away and threw the money to him. So what, the guy has no choice. What am I supposed to do? He took it away. That's a Chamsin. But forcing him where he compels him and then he finally says, okay, I want, even though he really doesn't want, but he says that he wants, that would be considered a valid sale and not be considered a Chamsin. Between Amud Beis, where the Gemara concludes the final Mishnah regarding this Mazik of Eish that we were speaking about. So the Mishnah says, Gates sheyotze mitachas hapatash v'hizik. If a spark comes out from underneath the anvil and it damages, the spark flies out and damages something. So chay, so the one who is busy with that fire is going to be liable. Now, let's say gamal shahayutan pishtan. Let's say there was a camel that was carrying flax. Va'av b'shusram, and was walking by in the public domain. Now, v'nichnis pishtan l'techa chanus. Now, the flax was hanging way over, and it went into the store. V'dolka b'neri shal chembeni, and it got lit on fire from the candle of the storekeeper because the flax went into the store. V'hidlik ha'zabir, and then it lit up and burnt up the whole tower. So bal gamal chayv. So the owner of the camel is going to be chayv because it's his liability by having the flax which caused the whole thing. Now, let's say the storekeeper had his candle on the outside, then the storekeeper is liable because he shouldn't have his candle out in the Rishus Aram. That's a liability that he caused. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Aimer, he says, but if the candle that he had outside was a Ner Chanukah that we light on the Yom Tov of Chanukah, which that's the mitzvah of Persumi Nisa to be on the outside, then he's exempt even though his candle was on the outside, which caused the whole conflagration. Now, Amr Avinu Mishmei de Rava, he says, Shema Mina Rabbi Yehuda, what we can infer from this halacha of Rabbi Yehuda, is that Ner Chanukah, the mitzvah of lighting the Chanukah lights, is mitzvah l'anicha b'techa sar, it's a mitzvah to keep it within 10 tefachim of the ground, which is because then it's connected, then it's something on the bottom where people see. Because if you're entertained that you can have it even higher than 10 tefachim, then why does Rabbi Yehuda say that Ner Chanukah is going to be exempt? Why? You're right that you're supposed to light the candles on the outside. But you should tell the storekeeper that it should have lit it higher than the camel and its rider, because it doesn't have to be within 10 tefachim, which is generally considered the area down on the ground. 10 tefachim is considered its a distinct area. But if it could be even higher, then why is he exempt? So obviously you can infer from Yud Zalacha that it's a mitzvah to put it within 10 tefachim. So that's why it was in the area where the flax could have reached, but he is allowed to because of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. And that's why he's exempt, because if he didn't have to, then he should be chayv. So Ami, they said, no. Truthfully, I could tell you that maybe the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is even higher than 10 tefachim. So my Ami, what are you going to say? That you should have put your Ner Chanukah higher than where the camel and the rider are? No, kiven de mitzvah ka'asik, since he's involved in a mitzvah of lighting Chanukah nairs. So kula hai lo etchuchur abonah, so the rabbis did not make him exert himself because of you're involved in the mitzvah, we don't want to be matriach you more than what you have to, and that's why he's going to be exempt. But not because the mitzvah has to be less than 10 tefachim, maybe it could be even higher. But once you're doing the mitzvah, we let you even in an area that maybe could cause damage to others. Now, I'm Rav Kahana, but Rav Kahana says that Darsh Rav Nosson ba Menyumi Mishmid Rav Tachem, that near Chanukah, although maybe you could even put it higher than 10 tefachim, but shenicha l'mala me'esrim amah, if it's placed higher than 20 amas, where now no one sees it anymore, and therefore the miracle is not going to be publicized, and the whole purpose of Ner Chanukah is for what's called Pirsumi Nisa, so then Psula, that's going to be invalid for the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Just like Kisuka Ukumavui, just like the halacha of Sukkah, where the schach cannot be higher than 20 amas, because it has to be l'man yedu derisechim asukah seshavti, you have to be able to know about it, and you don't see the schach higher than 20 amas. And like the halacha of Mavui, which is a certain area which is shared by many people, which could be confused with the Rishus HaRabim, so the Chacham required like a doorpost, which is Lechi and a Kaira. The Kaira, which is a crossbeam, can't be higher than 20 Amos, because again, that will defeat the purpose, which is to show the demarcation between the Mavu and the Rishus HaRabim. And again, higher than 20 Amos, people do not see, and that's the reason why by Ner Chanukah it also would be invalid, higher than 20 Amos. We shall return to you the 6th Perek Masechtes Baba Kama Perek HaKoinis, and with that we begin the 7th Perek Masechtes Baba Kama Perek Merubo, which this Perek talks about the halachas of Gneva, of theft, and specifically regarding, as we're going to see in this Mishnah, halach of Kefil, which is when the Ganav gets caught in his theft, which he has to pay not only the principal but also double that amount, that's a penalty, and also Dal Vehei, which is a unique halacha regarding when someone steals a sheep and an ox, and he slaughters it or he sells it, then he's caught, then he has to pay 4 or 5 times, depending if it's a sheep or an ox, of what he had stolen. So the Mishnah begins, Meruba Midas Tashlimi Kefil. The measurements of the halacha of paying double is more than Mimidas Tashlimi Abar V'Chamisha, than the measurement of the penalty of having to pay 4 or 5 times regarding the halacha of Tvichu Mechira. As the Mishnah explains, Shemidas Tashlumi Kefil Nohegis, because the halacha of having to pay the penalty of double it applies b'medavah shish beruachaim or b'medavah shem beruachaim, whether it's regarding a living thing or even if it's not a living thing. Meaning, if you stole something like a garment, which is not a living thing, the halach of kefil would apply. But amidas tashlum abav chamisha in the hegis, however, the halach of paying four or five times doesn't apply. Ela b'shor v'sebelvad only applies by an ox and by a sheep, and that's it. So therefore, we see that it's a greater application meruba the midah of kefil than the midah of dal v'hei, because that applies to whether a living thing or not, and this only applies to an ox and to a sheep. Then, like it says a pasuk in Shemais, ki yignev ish, I said that if a man will steal an ox or a sheep, he'll slaughter or sell it, etc., that's when you have the penalty of four or five times what you stole, which is less application than kefil. Now the Mishnah concludes and says, ein ha-goynev achar ganev misham tashlumi kefil. A thief who comes after a thief, in other words, if someone steals from a thief what he had stolen from someone else, and he gets caught, he doesn't have to pay the kefil penalty. And the reason being is because the pasuk says, v'gunav mibeis ha-ish, and then he's caught. That's stolen from the house of the man, of the owner, and not mibeis ha-ganav. So since he stole from a ganav, he doesn't pay kefil. And so too, v'lo ha-tevech, v'lo ha-moichar achar ganav, misham tashlum abav v'chamisha. And neither would it apply where if someone slaughtered or sold something that he took from a thief, neither would he pay four or five times the amount. And that is, as we'll see, because the halacha of tvich mechira only is based on and built on the halacha of kefil. When there's no kefil, so you're not going to pay double, so then you wouldn't pay three or four times, you only pay four or five, which is only post kefil. And since here, when you steal from a ganav, you're not paying kefil, so neither when you then do tvich mechira, you're going to have to pay for the tvich mechira four or five times either. Now the Gemara makes the following inference, notes the following point from our Mishnah. So it said the difference is, regarding the application, how extensive is it? It's more by kefil than by dal v'hei. Now, says the Gemara, ve'ilu midas tashlumi kefil nehegis, whereas to say that it's greater, the halacha of payment of kefil, that applies bein beganav, bein betoyin tainis ganav, whether if a guy himself had stolen, or whether he claims that it was stolen from him, in other words, we have a watchman, a shomer, who says, oh, you want your thing back? A robber had come and stolen it from me. Which the Gemara darshans later on, that the Torah says that guy himself who claims it was stolen from him has to pay kefil if he swore and it turns out that he was lying, just like as if he had stolen it himself if he was claiming that it was stolen from him. Now, so the Mishnah doesn't say that another area where kefil is bigger than dal v'hei is because kefil applies both when he steals it and when he claims that it is stolen from him. Whereas midas tashlum abav v'chamisha ein neheges, the halacha of dal v'hei doesn't apply ela b'ganav lavad, only when the guy steals it himself and then slaughters or sells it. That says the Gemara loy katani. Our Mishnah does not say that as a difference between kefil and dal v'hei. Obviously, you see that the halacha of paying four or five times the amount applies even if a guy makes the claim that it was stolen from him and really wasn't stolen from him, and he still had it, but he himself slaughtered and sold it. That doesn't say that that's a difference. It says the Gemara, Mesayei l'Reb Chiya Bar Abba, so that supports what Reb Chiya Bar Abba had said. Dam Reb Chiya Bar Abba, or Rabbi Yechon, and he says, Atoyin tainis ganav b'pikadon. If someone has a deposit, he's watching something, safeguarding for someone else, and when the guy comes to get his thing back, he says, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I'm part of Gnei Aveda, I just want you to know that it was stolen from me. And really, it wasn't, and he swore, and it turns out he was lying. So Rasham tashlumi kefil, just like a thief has to pay kefil, the guy who claimed it was stolen from him also has to pay double the amount. So too, Tavachu Machar, if not only did he was not stolen from him and he still had it, but he actually went and slaughtered and sold it, Misham Tashlumi Abav Chamisha. He has to pay four or five times the amount as if he himself had stolen it and then slaughtered it and sold it. Now Igid Amida, those that say a different version of this discussion, that it was said, Leimim Misayei L'Bchi Barabba. It was said, let's say the halacha of our Mishnah, which does not say this as a difference between kefil and dal v'hei regarding toyin tainis ganav, that it should support Reb Chiya Bar Abba. Why? Because the Amr Reb Chiya Bar Abba Rabbi Yechon, and he says that toyin tainis ganav b'pikadon. If someone makes a claim that it was stolen from him regarding a deposit, he says mishlam tashlumi kefil, he pays double, and so too if he was tavach u'machav slaughtered and he sold it, mishlam tashlumi abav v'chamisha, has to pay four or five times the amount. Seemingly that's supported from the Mishnah, because if dal v'hei did not apply by toyin tainis ganav, then the Mishnah should have said that as another difference between kefil and dal v'hei, that it's meruba kefil, that dal v'hei, which doesn't apply by toyin tainis ganav. That the Gemara says, no, not a raya. Megaton the Ain Bain? Does our Mishnah use a terminology, which sometimes it does, when it says that there is no difference, which would sound like it's exacting and there was nothing else left out? No, Marupa Katani. It just says what was more, which it's just saying some of the things that Kefil has over Dalad Vehei and Tana B'Shayer, it said, and it left some things over, so there was not a Raya. Could be it was just showing one application of where Kefil is more than Dalad Vehei, but could be it's not like Reb Chiya Bar Abba, and we could say maybe another difference actually would have been regarding Tanya Tanya Niskanav that only applies to Kefil and not to Dalad Vehei. Now the Mishnah said, so what is this area that Kefil is more than Dalad Vehei? It's Shemidis Tashlumi Kefil Nehegis B'chula, where the halacha of Kefil applies to whether the guy had stolen or claimed that it was stolen if he was a shomer, whether something that is a living thing or even not a living thing. Again, in contrast to Dalad Vehei, which only applies to Shur and Seh. So the Gemara says, Menan Nemili, from where do we know this, that Kefil applies to all things that are, even if it's not a living thing. So the Tanna Rabban, like Lina Braisa, the Braisa quotes a pasuk in Shemesh, which talks about this halacha of Kefil, and actually this context of the halacha of Kefil applies by Toin Tainaskanath, which talks about a shomer, which is regarding is that if he's claiming that it was stolen from him and he wants to make himself exempt. So that's where the pasuk says, Al kol dvar pesha. So it's regarding all things of negligence, which again the pasuk there concludes to saying, Asher yemi ki huzeh, adolekim yoved dvar shneim, which means to say that he's made a mikzis and they come to the bezdin and he swears, and then if they find out that he was lying, then he has to pay kefil. So the pasuk says many different terminologies, and the Bryce is going to illustrate what the terminologies are coming to say. So it says that what they're confronting each other is al kol dvar pesha, regarding anything of negligence. So that's a clause, a general statement. Anything that the guy was negligent for as a shomer, regarding if he's liable or he's saying that no, it was stolen from me and I'm exempt. So that's a clause, it's a general statement. Al shor, al chamor, al sev, al salma. Then it says, starts saying some specifics. It says that what he wants to collect from him is regarding an ox or a donkey or a sheep or a garment. That's a prat. That's specifics regarding where the halacha of kefil would apply to. Then it says, al kol aveda, regarding anything that's lost. Chazav v'kol. That goes back and says another general statement. Says whatever is lost. So klal or prat to klal. You have over here a general statement, a specific, and a general statement. So that we know is when the yigimel midash, I turn your gesture behind the corner to be shmal, which tells us, you qualify that the halacha of kefil is only something which is similar to those specifics, which is not only those specifics, because it's a klal, prat, klal, but it's anything that's like, that shares the characteristics of those specifics, which tells us, maha prat mefurish, davar metalta b'gufa moment, just like those specifics are things which are unique in that they are movable, and they are intrinsically money, they're worth, they have intrinsic worth, I've called davar metalta b'gufa moment, so anything that's movable, and it's intrinsically worth money, are going to be included in theft, whether you steal it or you claim that it was stolen from you for the halacha of kefil. Now, yatsu karkoi she'ena metatlin, that excludes land, if regarding that's the claim, which is not movable. Yatsu avadim shukshula karkoi, that excludes slaves, which are compared in halacha to land, as the pasuk in Biyuka says, v'snachaltim oisam, which is a term of inheritance, which is generally reserved for land. Slaves are utilized in the same terminology to tell us that they have the same halacha like karka. So if karka is excluded, avadim are excluded. And yotzu shtarois, and documents are excluded, sha'ava pisha metatlin, although they're movable, but ain gufan mamon, they're not intrinsically worth money. They can cause to be able to let you collect money, but the document itself is not something of value. And yotzu hektish, it also excludes regarding hektish, because re'eyuksiv, the pasuk there concludes, yisham shneim l're'ey, you pay double kefil to your friend, so that excludes hektish, which is not considered your friend. That would exclude that from the halacha of kefil. But again, that's the source where we see that it doesn't have to be a living thing. Anything that's movable and has intrinsic worth is included in the halacha of kefil. Now, that the Gemara asks, wait a second. If you're telling me you know this from a klal prat a klal, then imaha prat mefurish, but then go even deeper, get really specific. If those specifics that were mentioned are explicit, that davar shenivlasa metama b'magu b'masa, there are things, an ox, a donkey, things, the animals that when they die, there are things that they transmit tuma through touch or when they're carried. So av kol davar shenivlasa metama b'magu b'masa, then therefore you should only be allowed to learn that from the klal prat haklal. Also anything else that when there's a carcass, when the animal dies, it will have to be something that transmits tuma through touch or through carrying. But birds that do not transmit tuma through carrying or touching when it dies, that should not be included in halacha of kefil. So on that, the Gemara says, can you really say that?
But Vasalmaksiv, how can you ask such a question? One of the specifics mentioned over there is a garment. A garment doesn't die, doesn't transmit tuma as a nevela in maga masa. So how can you ask to say that it should exclude birds? So Amide said, no, wait a second. Our question is a valid question. Anan bebali chayim karmina. We were talking about living things. Ema bebali chayim, you should say, and this is the question we're asking regarding living things, davar shenivlosim et tama b'magam amasa in something that its carcass transmits tuma through touch and carrying. Yes, that should be included from the kal prata klal, which is compared to the things mentioned there in the psukim. But davar shein nevlosim et tama b'magam amasa loy, but something which does not transmit tuma when it dies through touch or through carrying should not be. Because as the Gemara continues at the top of Samach Gimel and Aleph explaining what their question is, the kolchad v'chad, each item mentioned there, shar, chamor, seh, salmo, klalu prat ba'apei nafshi darshin lay, they're all expounded as if they're their own klalu prat the klal. In other words, when there are many pratim, like in this pasuk, each one of them is like their own klalu prat the klal. We don't expound it as if they're one big prat and that you have to share all the characteristics of all of them, that to say, oh, and that's why the guy who was answering their question saying, wait a second, what do you mean the prat of Salma would include animals that the nevela does not transmit tuma, because just like a garment doesn't, so that would be included. And that's what they're explaining their question, that no. We see later on the next daf, Samach Dalma Beis, as it's taught in the Brisa of Bechizkia, for example, where it says, Himatze Timatze, and there are pratim mentioned somewhere else. So the Brisa there says, so put shor between the word of Himatze Timatze. And then it says separately, put chamor between Himatze Timatze. So as Rashi is pointing out, what you see from that Gemara on the next daf is that each one are considered their own separate drasha. You make a klal prat klal from shor, then you make a separate klal prat klal with chamor. You make a separate one with seh, you make a separate one with salma. So therefore, the question is, the salma, the garment, has nothing to do with birds. You would compare it to the prat, which is animals. The animals mentioned over there are animals that when they die, they transmit tuma through maga masa. That should tell us that all types of animal that was stolen would only be chayv and kefil if it transmits tuma when it dies with maga masa. Avaloifas loy, and therefore birds which do not transmit tuma with maga masa when it dies should not be included in halach of kefil. So I think my answer is im kain. If that was the case, that you want to say that the ke'en ha'prat, which qualifies that you have to compare it to the specific for the klal prat klal in all its characteristics, which yes, if you go that deep, would exclude birds. If that's the case, says the Gemara, nichtav rachman achad prata, then let the Torah have only written one of those specifics of all those animals that it mentions. And then you would have said to include anything which is similar to that prat, which would have been, yes, anything that its nevela transmits tumah. But from the fact that the Torah wrote more than one specific animal, why to mention a shor, a chamor, a seh, is to say to include all living animals, not only those that will transmit tumah as nevela, and therefore that includes birds. And that the Gemara asks, wait a second, what are you answering? That it should have said one and not the rest, and from the fact that it says the rest comes to include even animals that do not transmit tumah to be exactly like the prat, because then I should have said only one prat. And that the Gemara says, "Haynech the Rachmana." Which one are you telling me should have been written? And that is, as the Gemara explains, "Ikaz Rachmana Shar had the Torah only written ox havamina." Then you would have said, "Karv legabim mizbeach in," that the halacha of kevil only applies to things which could be sacrificed on the mizbeach, like a shor could. She'in karv lemizbeach lie, but things that cannot be sacrificed on the mizbeach would not be included. So I wouldn't even know. Let's say chamor. Now, "Ikaz Rachmana chamor," and had the Torah only written donkey, havamina kaddish bebechayra in. I would have thought that only something that could be sanctified, its firstborn in the kedusha of bechayra, which has to be given to the kayin, that would be included in the halach of kefil, which would be the same thing for shor and seh, which would all be included in the ke'en aprat of chamar, which chamar has the kedusha of bechayra. It's the one non-kosher animal that has that halacha, which you would think that there would have to be three characteristics that any animal would have to share, like chamar has, to be included in halach of kefil, which would have to be a living animal, would have to have that its firstborn gets the sanctity of bechayra, and that its nevela transmits tumah when it dies. But let's say a deer, which only has similarities in two things, which is she'in kaddish bebechayra because it doesn't have the sanctity of the firstborn, then lie. Then I would think that even they would not be included in halach of kefil. So therefore, says the Gemara in this question back to the answer, that's why the Torah writes shor. Because if it doesn't have for the necessity of shur, because you already know it from chamor, it's coming to tell you even things that do not share the characteristic of bechir, which at least it shares the characteristics of chamor and shur in two areas. One is that they're living animals, and two is that the nevela transmits tumah. But still, I would tell you that oifes would not be included because it couldn't just say shar, because I would think only things that are brought on the mizbeach. It couldn't just say chamor, because I would think only thing to have kedusha b'chayra. That's why it has to say shar to include even things that don't have kedusha b'chayra. But at least it shares two characteristics, in contrast to oif, which only shares one characteristic, maybe that's not included. Sami, they said, okay, mk nicht b'chamon is shar b'chamor. Then let the tribe only written shar and chamor, and then I would have known all other animals besides birds. Selam ali, why do I need another animal mentioned, that of sheep? What's that coming to teach us? Shema minu lasuya oifes. That must be coming to tell us to include even other things that even share only one characteristic, which is that it's a living animal, even though it's not kadosh b'bukhara, and it's not something that transmits tuma when it dies. Now that the Gemara still asks, okay, so you're right, seems to be superfluous, and therefore it's coming to include something else, which including birds. But ve'im lasuya oifes tahir. Maybe it's only coming to include kosher birds, which at least it's a little bit similar to the specific mention over there, which is dumi desa. It is comparable to sheep on some level, to mitame, because the nevela of a kosher bird does transmit tuma. It is similar a little bit because it transmits tuma with begadim abes abliya. It transmits tuma to the person's garments when the kosher bird that's nevela is in his throat, where that's halacha unique to kosher birds. Aval eifes tameyim, but non-kosher birds, the less butuma, that they don't have any tuma at all, even as a nevela. Dole mitame begadim, basically they don't even transmit tuma when they're in the person's throat. As the Gemara Masechtas Chulin of Kof Membeis explains this halacha, that you would think that the nevela, the dead carcass of a bird, a non-kosher bird, would transmit tuma to the garments when it's in the throat, like it is by a kosher bird. And that the Gemara there teaches, the pasuk says nevela utreifa lo yoichel utamaba. A nevela, which is an animal that died without proper slaughtering, or trefa is an animal with a mortal defect. You can't eat to become defiled by it. So there the Gemara tells us it's only the halacha of tumah, which is what the words the pasuk used over there, only applies to a type of a bird that the prohibition to eat it is because of nevela or trefa. Now that excludes a non-kosher bird, where the problem is not because of that it wasn't properly slaughtered or because it had a mortal defect, it's just because of baal teichel tumah. You can't eat it because it's a non-kosher bird. So it doesn't have any tumah even on beis abliya, so maybe loy. So maybe that shouldn't be included even from the extra word of se. So as Taisus Girsa has it actually, that the word ella is mentioned over here, that you're right, kol ribuyuhu. The word that it says there in the pasuk of al kol avedu, it says on all, kol devar pesh, it says all is ribuyuhu. That is an inclusionary term. So as Taisus says, that although the brisa that we had quoted had expounded the pasuk of including the halachas of kefil, not only for a living thing, but even for a non-living thing, which we said that the characteristic is for something that's metaltel v'gufe mammon, it had said it that it's a klal prat a klal. So on that says Taisus, it's not because that's how we're expounding the pasuk. Rather, it's for whatever reason it is, as the Gemara is assuming right now, is because of a ribuy of the word of kol, that we're including anything that's movable and that intrinsic is worth money. It's just because the drush of klal prat a klal is the common way that the Gemara mentions in how you do when you have all these different terminologies in the pasuk to define the characteristic of what the pasuk comes to include. That's what the Brisa says in that way, but Taisa says that's not really the drush that the Brisa used to learn it up. It's really from the extra, from the kol, which is a reba, including everything, anything that's movable and that has intrinsic worth. And the Brisa only says in klal prat a klal is a way of just illustrating it, but really the halacha is from a ribuy, and again, that's how we know this halacha that we said minan amili, that the halacha of kefil applies not only by living things, but even non-living things, again, as long as it has these two characteristics of gufi mammon, and that it's a dav hametaltel from the word kol, which includes everything.